Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Time for our second hour. Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game, broadcasting for the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. D-Mace and I were out at Titans practice today at training camp. It's always fun to see everybody out there, all the media. I was standing over by, at one point, John Glennon, Terry McCormick, Paul Kuharski. I was like, is this 1999 or what? Like, you could have found those four or five people standing in the same place 25 years ago watching the first year you guys were out at that complex. And of course, we were all there the year before at TSU. So they got a chuckle out of that. They're all still asking the question. So it is fun to have a lot of continuity there. And also, I did, and you were standing by. Mm-hmm. We had a little chat going, and I couldn't help. Teron Davenport was standing on one side. Mm-hmm. Then there was Paul. I slipped over to the other side of Paul, and I just asked Teron Davenport if he saw the score of the Mets-Yankees game last night. You see the score there, Nick? You saw what happened last night, the Subway Series?
Sorry, there we go. I did.
A butt kicking.
And
butt kicking.
I mean, Willie, it's now a race for the wild card. I can officially say
it's a race.
It's a race.
It's a race.
Don't get too happy, Willie. Pump the brakes.
Coach Willie had to bring it in. Yeah. You notice I didn't come in with my Dwight Gooden jersey on, which I could have. I just couldn't resist taking one shot. Kuharski loves. He's a big Yankee fan. Terry McCormick is also a huge Yankee fan. But the Mets have swept the season series with the Yankees 4-0. I don't even know how to act. I'm like, because like you said, the minute you get all excited about the Mets, they come crashing down.
They do Met things.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
And that's not always a good thing.
No, it's
Met
not.
Things.
Willie, do you just treat this like it's the Iron Bowl? So if the Mets end up sweeping them, like if you guys don't make the playoffs, you're okay with that?
No, I want to make the playoffs. Because here's the deal. Now they turn right around and play the arch nemesis, the Braves, for 4 games. Mm. And the Braves have eaten the Mets lunch for most of the last 25 years, other than a game here or a game there. They have, whenever they've needed to beat the Mets, they beat the Mets. The Mets are now only a game and a half behind the Braves because the Braves have been absolutely
injury-riddled,
wiped out by a ton of injuries. So they're catching. This is an interesting time. They've got a chance here to, whether they catch the Braves or not, take another step forward, maybe stay in this wild card race. The trade deadline's coming up. A lot of interesting things to pay attention to in baseball. Nick is a huge Cardinals fan. Cardinals are trying to in the same spot. The Pirates are, with Paul Skeens and those guys, are in the mix. Pirates just beat the Cardinals yesterday. So there's about 6 or 7 teams in the wild card race. It's been a lot of fun. But I did have fun ribbing my colleagues there because there's been some times I'm going to stand on that sideline when the Yankees have wiped out the Mets in the Subway Series.
It hadn't been pretty.
Yeah. So when you have an opportunity, you got to say something.
You got to gloat. Right? Do what you do. But knowing that, hey, listen, there's still a lot of games left. So pump the brakes.
There's a lot of games left. But they are done. We got the bragging rights, at least for the Subway Series, regardless of what happens for it. The Yankees have been slumping, too. So even Kuharski was not ready to talk a lot of trash. Yankee fans are a little concerned right now. Okay, later in the hour, we're going to hear from DeAndre Hopkins. You'll also, before the show's over, hear some clips from a great interview that Chase and Big Joe did earlier today with J.C. Latham. He is a really engaging guy to talk to. I'm really going to enjoy watching him because you seem to root for guys that are personable like him. He's got a live wire to him. Mm-hmm. He's engaging. I enjoy what I heard from Jamal Adams yesterday.
Yeah.
You got to love when people enjoy having a conversation with the media, that they're not just mailing it in. I like that part.
Well, I enjoy, guys that get up there and they understand the purpose of being up there. They understand, they're understanding the questions in the room. And they know that, listen, I'm going to be not combative, but I'm going to be as honest as I can. Players, coaches, their honesty stops to a point, and rightfully so. You shouldn't know every nook and cranny that is, or everything that's coming out of every angle of that organization. You shouldn't. Now, I know a lot of people would love to know, but that's, it's not how it works. So I enjoy the guys that get up there that is, they're not combative. They understand the, you know, the reporter or whoever's asking the questions, they got a job to do. And you have a job to do with giving them whatever information you feel is best for that particular question. So, and Jamal Adams did it yesterday. J.C. Latham has done it. Callahan has done it.
We had a good conversation with Tony Pollard yesterday.
He did it yesterday. So you like guys to get up there that doesn't seem like they have this sort of vendetta against the people that are asking questions. You know, you see what I'm saying? Get up there already on the defensive. Mm-hmm. And I just think the guys that go up there opposite of that, typically you get good interaction back and forth. Again, they're going to tell you the truth up into a point. They're always going to hold something back.
Yeah.
But you got to understand, as the person that is asking you a question, you got to understand that, and the player got to understand why you're asking that question.
Yeah, I think if the player's mentality is, look, there's some places that I can't go, but exactly. If I can take a question and have the mentality of what can I say? Mm-hmm. How can I communicate here? That's mm-hmm. a good thing, and Latham has got that gift.
Exactly.
There's no question. But he has some good stuff about Nick Saban. There's some really interesting points. Obviously, everybody wants to know how he's doing with Bill Callahan.
Yes.
And how he's connecting with Peter Skoronski, who you hope are going to be pillars on the left side of the line for a long, long time. That would make such a big deal. So that's coming up later in the show. We're going to hit on a clip that Brian Callahan said about his young quarterback here in a moment. One fun note, I shared this with you during the break. If you're a hockey fan, you know who this guy is, but it's just a funny story. A tweet comes out from one of the Flyers players, Travis Sanheim, and he says, sources say Flyers forward Travis Konecny isn't going anywhere as the 27-year-old is closing in on an extension to stay in Philly. My source, and he has an arrow pointing to a picture of Travis Konecny. So this is a defenseman scooping the rest of the Philadelphia media.
That's the best source
enough,
to have.
Yeah.
The source is the guy.
So that would be like Roman Yossi breaking a story that Philip Forsberg signing a new deal or something like that.
It's like, you should know.
And
that's
so all the media
mate.
Was like, dang, we just got scooped by one of the players. What happened?
Hey,
and sure enough, 10 minutes later, they announced it. 8 years and $8.75 million. So $70 million guaranteed for Travis Konecny. So funny story there. All right, now let's get to Brian Callahan. He's a positive guy, as we've said. He is not going up to the podium looking to send a message to a player through the media in a negative way. He pumped up a lot of guys, but he was couching it by saying, we're not in pads yet. Let's not get excited. I'm liking what I'm seeing about this guy or that guy. He mentioned Josh Wiley. He mentioned Sweat. He mentioned one of the linemen in the huge competition, John Ajokwu. But here's what he had to say about Will Levis. Pay close attention to this.
Thoroughly, but Will and the offense through 2 days, what have you seen?
Very pleased. I think Will's doing a great job playing on time. You know, obviously we're, again, focused on a little bit more of the timing elements, the shorter passing game, but, man, he's been really impressive. I think his hard work this offseason and over the summer has really paid off. He's incredibly confident right now, and he's earned that confidence. And every day that he comes out and plays well, he earns more confidence. And I think that's the fun part about where he's at. He's dialed in. He has studied. You can just tell he's ready for what's ahead. And I think I told him yesterday, if he keeps stacking days like he had yesterday and today, he's gonna play pretty good football. And it's a day by day process. And we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. But I've been really pleased with where he's at.
So he's positive on a lot of things.
Yep.
I thought that was an extra level to really send a message. He likes what Levis is doing, putting in the work. Did you sense that? Like, how would you interpret that?
I would interpret it as being just what you said, but not getting too far ahead of yourself, knowing that this is a long camp, that things just started. he hadn't hit any adversity in camp yet. Everything is, you know, out pat. Your guys are out there. You know, it's not like, you know, we've been going at this for 3 or 4 days and everybody's body's tired. And all of a sudden you get out there. How do you fight through that tiredness of your body and fight through that mental fatigue that all players go through in camp? Because camp is so long, the mental fatigue is real, because you start to forget what day it is, like, because everything just seems like Groundhog's Day, because you like to stay on the schedule. Every team in his league is on the schedule, and when 2 days come, after about the fourth day, you forget what it's like. You're not even worried about the day. So can you fight through that mental fatigue of camp being long and grueling and hot? So that's what he's sort of tempering it, you know, because he understands that there are more days to come.
No question. Now, one thing that he's centered on that I paid attention to, it seems like he is very pleased with Levis's understanding of the offense, his timing, the speed, the preparation. He's coming in having his homework done. Mm-hmm. Will Levis put it in terms this way? I think this is always a good test of, do you know the system? Mm-hmm. Can you teach it to others? Like he said, I want to know it so well that I can have a conversation with one of my teammates on teaching them, but you have to know it backwards and forwards to do it. That's a good test. Like sometimes I'm like, okay, I think I know this. I know this. All right, we'll teach it to Joey over here. You just got to know. I got it.
Do
you really know it? Deeply enough.
Do you know it to a point where you
can
tell
him? And the quarterback
needs
to know it on that level.
The quarterback needs to know it on that level that, you know, frankly, you know, you want all your players to know it that are on the offensive side of the ball. But it's different for the quarterback. Like, you have to know every little thing about this offense. And whenever Will Levis gets to that point, I think you would truly see if he's going to flourish or not. Right now, he's still learning his offense. He's picking it up. Seems like he's picking it up pretty good, but we're only 2 days in. Obviously, you had the mini camps that helped out a lot, and then him taking the playbook at home, so he got a chance to, you know, go through it and then run some routes on air with the guys in the offseason, and I'm pretty sure they were going over the playbook. So, but he wants to get to a point where, you know, he's teaching everybody. You want, as a quarterback, and just look at the great ones, and I'm not talking about all quarterbacks, even though I think all quarterbacks need to get to this point, you know, that I'm talking about, but look at the great quarterbacks, Manning, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, and we can go, the list will go on, Pat Mahomes. But Pat is a little bit different because Andy, but watch them. They are the coaches. If you took away their offensive coordinator, those guys will still be able to run that offense, and it would be successful.
And it helps you know what's going to be there when the ball is snapped.
It helps you to know that, okay, damn it, we're in this play, and coach didn't call an audible out of this play. All right, I know what I can go to because I know this offense so well. I know what I can go to. Check, whatever. Omaha, like
right.
Peyton used to say, Omaha. So I know this offense so well that the coordinator don't have to whisper in my ear and say, hey, change it. Yeah. No, I know it. I got it. That's where you want Will Levis to get to. He gets to that point where he owns this offense. He has to get to that point. This is his offense. He owns it. So no matter who you bring in, who you take out, this is my offense. I know what to do in this offense.
And we've talked a lot about the...
But he's not there yet.
I wouldn't think he's
exactly
there. And we're not really going to find out until they start playing. Mm-hmm. But I'm encouraged with what Brian Callahan, as a new guy, is seeing. And this is... We've talked a lot about his age at 25. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is part of the upside of coming into the league as an older player, is you have more of the ability to learn fast and comprehend, and I'm hoping that's a strength of his, because we know he's got a rocket of an arm, right? Mm-hmm. He's got the physical ability to throw the ball. Like, he can get it there. He mm-hmm. can put it anywhere on the field. So if you can match that with true understanding of the offense, to connect the dots, then maybe you're on your way to something good here. I'm not trying to hype him up at all, but we're all looking for signs of how he's going to progress because there's so much riding on that progression.
Exactly, and I'm going to go back to what I said in the first segment when you asked, well, what did you see? What did you like? This and that. Yep. Well, I saw some good things from Will Levis, but then I go back to the pass, down the middle of the field, Tyler Boyd's wide open. If you zip that in, it's a 50-yard completion, maybe even a touchdown. But you tried to put touch on it and tried to lead him. You can't lead him in that situation. There's too much space between you, him, and not enough space between him and the defensive back. He's open, but not to a point where you can loft the ball. You got to drill that in there. But then as he threw it, you saw him come back and say, he pointing like, yeah, I should have just drove it in there. I should have drove it in there. That's a guy that is getting it. That's a guy that is learning on the fly as he goes.
See, that's why insight like that, and I hope people listen. I'm not trying to preach to people on how to listen to talk radio or whatever, but this is why I think that is a very important point that's much more important than looking at what somebody puts on a Twitter of, Levis was 7-for-10 today in the scrimmages. Like
it's like, what did that 7-for-12 look like? Was it 3 or 4 checkdowns?
There's way more value in a play like that where it ends up being, maybe it's incomplete, maybe it's complete, but the important thing is there needs to be a correction. There's a learning process on what you see on that play, right? That's that's way more important than the actual result of the play in practice. Now, you hope over a bunch of practices that there's some balls are complete.
It started to even out.
But that's the more important part, especially in these early practices. Mm-hmm. But I see everybody out there charting, well, was that complete? Did he catch it? You know, or who fumbled that? Who jumped offside? You know, like, okay, I get it. Like, yeah. You don't want to be that guy. But like Chigakonkwo had the ball stripped from him. There was a couple of balls stripped. Callahan really got after him. I'm sure people are going to bring that to light throughout the day. And Chig is going to be going, damn. They'll light me up on Twitter.
But if it happens once, okay, yeah. I get it. But if it's a repeated thing, then we have a problem.
Yeah.
I would tend to believe that was a it happens in practice. Guy gets in there and he may strip the ball out. Chig ended up recovering it himself.
Yeah, he got his own.
He got it back. But yet and still, you don't want to put yourself in a position where you are giving the ball away or there's a chance for the defense to you know, get a turnover on a strip, you know, on a fumble after you caught the ball. So there are things that this offense, you know, from what I've seen, it's an offense that has just been put together. That's what it looks like. An offense that has just been put together with maybe a couple of practices here and there, but they're still all learning this thing together.
Yeah, so what does it look like in 2 weeks, exactly. 3 weeks? That's the key. All right, when we come back, a part of that offense is DeAndre Hopkins. He was at the podium today. We'll listen to what he had to say about a whole array of things right after this here on 102.5 The Game. We're back here on Willie and D-Mates, 102.5, 106.3, the Game Nashville app, which you can listen to anywhere, absolutely free, Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook Live. Willie and D-Mates brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 and up and in Tennessee to bet. Now, the wide receiver translator is about to get cranked up here. We're gonna listen to DeAndre Hopkins, see where his head is right now. He just looks so smooth to me, D-Mace. Like, he's a guy, we've talked about him a lot on the stage of his career, and what do you do with a guy like that contract-wise? And I do look at him, the way he moves, as a guy that doesn't look like he's expending that much energy to do what he needs to do, and he's so unique on how he catches the ball. I can see him being one of those rare guys who can play into his, you know, mid-30s, close to the mid-30s, and still find a way to be effective. He just seems like he's that pitcher that knows how to change speeds, knows how to get open. That's what jumps out to me when I watch him. This is the first time I watched him this season. He doesn't look any different to me.
He's a guy that is working on – he's a guy that's working purely on knowledge of the game. His mental aptitude, he's working – it's not his physical that is getting him, you know, the yardage or the catches – because he's not the same receiver he was 4 years ago, and we shouldn't expect him to be from a physical standpoint. But from a mental standpoint, he's grown even more. He understands leverage. He understands coverages. He knows how to get guys open or how to get himself open. He knows spacing. That's a critical – and – what do I say just about every time we talk about wide receivers? Knowing where you need to be and being in that specific place. Know where you're supposed to be and be there. Callahan talked about that today. Guys knowing where they're supposed to be and also being there. D-Hop knows exactly where he's supposed to be. And it may seem like he's getting there sort of effortlessly, but he's thinking it all through. He's looking at the big picture rather than just that spot I got to get to. He's looking at how can I open this space up a little bit more, either for myself or for somebody else. He works purely from a mental standpoint.
That's something we never think about. Because we're all, most of us, I say us, people that play fantasy football and watch a lot of football that haven't played at a high level, the concept of I may not get the ball, but if I do certain things, I can help other people get the ball. That's a huge part of the game.
Yeah.
Right? That's like in basketball, the only thing I can relate to is sometimes the guy who sets the good screen, he may not get the ball.
Exactly.
But sometimes when you set the screen, you do get the ball.
You can roll off and get a dunk.
Right. But it's a huge part of what happens. So a person doing his job saying, if I do this, if I don't get the ball, I'm still opening it up. That's a huge part of the game that is worth understanding.
Yeah, and that's the part that he gets, because he was never this fleet of foot guy. I mean, he was never this fast burning guy. He had tremendous skill to play the position, but he wasn't a burner. You're talking about a guy that was a former basketball player at Clemson. So it's not like he was a burner from day one. No, this is a guy that understood how to play the position and has grown a greater knowledge of how to do that at an older age, which keeps him in the NFL longer. What kept me in the NFL longer, I tell everybody, listen, as a young guy, don't fall into the habit of depending solely on your physical gifts, because eventually, either through injury or just through time, it's all going to sort of wear down. What you have to do while you have those physical gifts, work on your mental gift as well. Work on how do I use this to my advantage? How do I leverage guys? I can't always run by guys, even though I'm young and I got speed. It's not always about running past guys. It's about setting guys up to get past them. And D-Hop, because he never had that 4.2, 4.3 speed. Hell, I don't even know if he was a 4.4.
But it didn't matter.
Yeah. It didn't matter with him, because he did a great job at using his body and his ability to think through the game.
Right.
And he still – that's something that will never leave him, the ability, at least while he's playing, the ability to think the game through.
Now, we're still not saying that they should sign him
to
an extension today.
Exactly. I'm still not saying they should sign him to an extension today.
See him playing for the next few years because of that aspect. It's like Greg Maddux. Like you said, it didn't matter whether Greg Maddux was throwing 88, 86, 90.
He had control because it
was not about that. He knew how to win regardless of that. So I think D-Hop has got that kind of thing. Let's hear from D-Hop on what he had to say at the podium earlier today after practice.
How do you feel coming into camp this year? A little bit different, and what's your outlook on everything?
Feel good, excited. New pieces, new team, new year, so just looking forward to it.
What did you kind of take away the last 2 days, getting together with everyone?
Going to have a competitive team, guys talking, guys came ready to play. in shape. So, you know, I think, you know, just looking forward to how camp ends, but taking it day by day.
To kind of get ready for camp, and have you changed things over the course of your career to know when to peak at the right time?
No, I've been doing this for 12 years, pretty consistent. So, you know, can't change what's not broke. But, of course, you know, always trying to get better and just working on myself.
Any thoughts on Will, maybe just from 1 year to the next, what changes you might have seen in all coming into camp?
Just knowing that he's coming into camp. As QB1, I think obviously his mindset is a little different than it was last year going into camp, and you can tell how he's approaching every day.
Do you sense like a higher level of confidence from him, and just like a different swagger, you know, knowing that he has the keys to everything?
He's always had a swagger. He's always been the same, so I wouldn't say it's anything different from when he came last year, and you know, he didn't win the job.
He was talking about the fifth time something's installed, he's very conscious of taking a different note each time. You're seeing stuff installed for the 500th time or however many. How do you keep things kind of new and look at something without being, Callahan used the word bored for a veteran?
It's a new offense. I haven't played an offense like this, so you know, I don't think I can be bored, you know, trying to learn this offense. So it's definitely, you know, pass friendly. So, you know, I just wake up every day trying to come out, execute, be there for my quarterback. And, you know, it's different. I played in a lot of different offenses. This is a different one. So, you know, a lot of studying when I get home.
Does pass friendly mean just more passing, or do you like some of the different schemes?
I like some of the different schemes. You know, I haven't seen schemes like this. So, you know, I guess when I say pass friendly, it's just, you know, for us receivers, you know, it's just, you know, sometimes that, you know, you might get the ball, you know, more times than not at receiver. So just, you know, for us, you know, just a little bit more excitement out wide.
New offense includes a lot of the same routes that you've run. So when you're looking at that, a particular route being reinstalled that you're very familiar with.
Right.
How do you find new stuff about a route that you've caught hundreds of balls on?
For me, it's just going out and trying to stay sharp, you know, sticking to the basics. I know I've been doing this for a long time, so, you know, not really, you know, expecting the same results because guys have been playing me. They've been watching me for a while. They know some of the things that, you know, I kind of excel at. So just going out and kind of just trying to win against people who know that, you know, I might, you know, run this route this kind of way. So for me, it's always a challenge.
When asked about possible extension, you know, Rand said that you know where you stand with this organization, with this franchise. Can you, like, verbalize to us, like, where you feel you stand with it?
Should I take it day by day? I love Tennessee. I love, you know, what Miss Amy's doing. So, you know, I think this is, you know, the happiest I've been in any organization. So, just, you know, just let that speak for itself.
What is it about this organization that makes you so happy?
You know, how Miss Amy run things. You know, it's a great place to be. You know, she's putting pieces together, you know, to try to win. And, you know, it's exciting.
That we see you out and about in the city itself, you do a lot of things. Like, what is it about Nashville that, you know, has really captured your heart?
You know, I'm a country boy, so, you know, I grew up on country. I grew up around, you know, places like this, you know, a little smaller, but, you know, it's familiar being from South Carolina.
Do you buy into the contract year boost performance thing that a lot of people talk about, players playing better when they have 1 year left?
Man, I really don't, man. I guess kind of go back and answer that for yourself by looking at my stats going in the contract or out of contract or just getting a contract.
Yesterday there was a lot of smack talk from the defense early in the team drills, and you kind of gave it back to them. That's kind of a side that we haven't seen a whole lot of you know, since you've been here. Is that just another aspect of it, or is that something you enjoy? Or?
I don't know. I guess y'all miss some of those practices. But, yeah, I definitely always talk smack. that's who I am. You know, I just like, I like to compete. I've done that since I've been a rookie in the NFL to now. You know, but obviously during the game, it's business. You know, I'm not out there talking smack every play, but of course it's friendly competition. But you know, just trying to match their energy. We got a good defense.
Have you seen enough of Legarius, you know, through the offseason or even just yesterday to get an idea of his style and sort of what makes him successful?
He takes everything serious, and he's all about his, you know, technique and, you know, details. Even in walkthroughs, you know, he's very detail oriented, and you can tell that, you know, he's been coached well and he's played a lot of good ball. But yeah, you know, we haven't obviously had a lot of reps against each other, but you can tell that, you know, he's one of the best doing it.
Passing kind of been with Jamal, and what's a guy like that bring to a team?
Pardon me,
Jamal Adams. What have your past encounters been like with him, and what's he bring to the team?
Jamal brings excitement, energy. You know, Jamal is, you know, he came out here from the first day excited. You know, doing what he do. You know, Jamal is an experienced player. I've played against him. I've hung out with him, you know, before. So Jamal is. It's definitely going to bring a different component to the defense, you know, especially in the secondary. But, you know, I think the guy, you know, he's a veteran. He's played a lot of ball. So I was just excited to see him play.
Last year it was full tilt. This year, Coach said resilient and relentless are kind of the key words that he's pushing. How much meaning is there in a coach's, like, main message?
What's the question?
I'm curious about, like, Ryan's main message is resilience and relentless. Last year, Mike was big on full tilt. How much does a coach's main message like that, that's up on the wall that you see every day, mean?
It means a lot, especially, you know, when your head coach is, you know, just like, you know, the quarterback. He's leader of the team, leader of the organization, you know. So, you know, seeing that, seeing what he wants, obviously, you know, we're going to try to go out and perform to our best. You know, we're in the NFL, so obviously, you know, we got here for a reason. And seeing that, you know, those messages like that, it's just a reminder. And I think it's good that, you know, we have those up.
You talk about tendencies, D-Hub, and how some guys, you know, kind of know what you're good at and what you can do. Even at this stage in the game as a veteran, do you find new ways to have, I don't know, nuances to show them something they may not have seen from you?
Of course. You know, my receiver coach, he's always critiquing my game, telling me certain things that I can do to be better. And, you know, I love that. I want that. You know, I never want to, you know, feel like I know it all or, you know, I've arrived. You know, it's always new talent, you know. So, for me, I love being critiqued and, you know, just working on little things that I can do better, you know. So, for me, I love it.
That's DeAndre Hopkins. Interesting to listen to. Very laid back. But if you listen to him, you can tell how much of a student of the game he is. And as we talked about before, we played that for you. He's got that look to him where he doesn't have to have the 98-mile-an-hour fastball to be effective because he does the work, the studying, and he knows how to change speeds like a pitcher. He knows what the play is designed to do, where he's supposed to be. So some things that jumped out to me, D-Mace, for a guy that's been through. You heard Brian Callahan said, look, that guy knows so much he can be bored because he knows everything. He's been taught all the kinds of offenses. But you had D-Hop say, I went in there this morning. I'm going to go home and study. I'm taking notes because this is a new pass-friendly offense. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't seen some of this, but he's excited to play in this offense. And that's pretty good after 12 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's a new offense. You know, as an aging player, which D-Hop is, you don't want to have too many changes. Like, you don't want to have to be going through too many new offenses the last half of your career. That's what he has been, you know, that's what he has been through. He was in a different offense in Arizona. He was in a different offense here. Then he's in another different offense. So he's been through three different offenses in 3 years. That's not fun. You can't get bored because you got to learn all this stuff. But you do want to get to a point where it becomes embedded in your brain and seared in your brain. It's second nature where you're not getting bored with it, but you know it and you're still taking notes. But it's not like when you first started learning the offense. So, you know, he's not going to get bored, especially And let me take the word bored out. He's not going to – he's always going to be excited about this offense because it's something new and he's learning it all.
So when he was kind of pressed a little bit because he said this is a pass-friendly offense. What does that mean to you when you hear that? Because it sounds like that's got his attention. He says, well, I think we're going to catch more passes in this offense. They're going to throw the ball more.
I'm not sure if pass-friendly means more passes. It doesn't.
Not necessarily.
Doesn't mean, because you can throw the ball around the yard and not score no damn points. You know, you're not scoring any points. We've seen that. Or you building it, or you stacking all these stats, and then you look at the end of the day and it's like, y'all lost. Y'all are, you know, four and whatever. But yeah, y'all, no. Pass happy offense means that, you know, we are, the things that we're doing from a schematic standpoint, it put pressure on the defense. And it allows everybody to be – it allows you, like he said, it allows D-Hop, who may be the second or third guy, it allows him the ability to get the football because of the way you're running the offense, because of the schematics of the offense. It's not just we're calling this offense and we're going to this guy. These are the one or two guys. No, in this new offense, everybody has a chance. Not that we're going to throw it, you know, 90 times and only run it 20. No, on every pass play, just about, everybody has an opportunity to get the ball. To me, that is a pass happy or pass friendly.
Okay.
Pass friendly offense when everybody – when I go out for a pass play, don't think you're not getting the ball because you may be getting the ball.
All right, so now let's ask the question through the wide receiver translator.
Wide receiver translator.
So in hearing you say it and hearing D-Hop talk about that, does he like this offensive scheme a lot better than last year's offensive scheme?
I think he does. I think he likes it for this reason. Now, he's going to have to – this is something he's going to have to sort of make sure he stays on point with throughout the whole season because of the type of player he is, that maybe sometimes they're going to get away from you. They're going to get away from you. You may not catch but three ball or five balls in two games. But you got to know that eventually it's coming back around to me. That's the type of offense that this is. I may not catch a pass in the first quarter, or he may only target me two times in the first quarter, but I got to know because of this offense, the third, fourth quarter, he may target me 10 times. I got to be ready. I got to know that. So I have to stay engaged with the game. What did I always say last year about what are they doing? Why are they not involving Traylon
Burks?
Yeah. You got to involve a guy like that. They involve D-Hop. He flourished in what they were doing. But an offense that is pass friendly, it doesn't allow anybody to float. It doesn't allow people to just, I'm not getting the ball. Like I felt Traylon was last year, like to a point, he's not getting the ball. So
it's not going to come my way. It's not going to come my way. Why bother?
Exactly. Yeah. But in this offense, the way sort of D-Hop explained it, and you're getting it from the wide receiver translation, is that just because I'm the third or fourth option doesn't mean I'm not getting the ball.
I like the sound of that.
I like that as a wide receiver because I may end up catching five, eight balls one game, but I got to know on the flip side of that, I may end up catching one or two the next game. But it's going to come back around. Why? Because this offense is friendly to everybody that's catching passes.
And so let's hope the quarterback can connect the dots. Exactly. He also said, it's worth noting, happiest I've been in any organization. And this was in context of, what do you the future? We'll see what happens. This is the last year of his contract. Everybody knows it. Jared has thrown the gauntlet down. He thinks they should re-up for the following year already before they play. But I do think I took note of that when he said, because they asked him to go a little further. Why? He said, I'm a country boy. I like it here. It's like South Carolina.
Hit the wide receiver translator. Hit it right now.
Wide receiver translator.
Is he saying he wants a new deal?
No. He wasn't even saying he wanted a new deal. He was saying, listen, I'm a country boy from a small country town. I feel back at home here in Nashville because it's a small country town. He calling y'all a bunch of country folks, which is not a bad thing. I mean, it's not. That's basically what he's saying.
I thought we were a big major league city.
No,
now.
You're not a big major league city. He's telling you that. I grew up in a small country town. I love it here because I love country music. And basically, this is a small country town. And there's nothing wrong with that.
If he likes it, he likes
exactly.
it.
Exactly. That's why he likes it. There are things to do. I get it. But to his core, he likes it because it's a small country town. Houston is a big town.
Houston's so spread out, exactly. I can't even figure it out. They got
Arizona
more spaghetti strings
with
their
country,
highways.
It's something crazy. Different. So, yeah, so when he says that, what he's saying is like, listen, I feel at home here. I grew up in a small town in South Carolina. I'm here in a small town in Nashville now, and I love it. And there's nothing wrong with that at all because I'm going to tell you, yes, it's growing, but it still is a small city.
Okay.
And he loves it.
The wide receiver translator is going to go national in our next segment. We're going to ask D-Mace about one of his favorite teams and his favorite quarterbacks, Josh Allen and the Bills. We've got a good clip to play for him. But the Bills have a lot of different wide receivers this year. We're going to ask D-Mace about the Bills wide receivers next. Pay attention because, hey, the fantasy drafts are coming up. You're going to want to know who should you pick on the Bills as far as their receivers. That's coming up next in our wide receiver translator session here on 102.5 The Game. All right, it is time to get into the wide receiver translator. And now I'm just realizing this. Nick, I told you what we're doing, right? We're going to go to the Buffalo Bills. Do we have this clip queued up on the Bills? This is from the NFL Ringer podcast. Let's see if Nick has it in his back pocket. This is poor communication by me.
I'm sure Nick has it. Nick's always on his jam, man. You tell him, boom.
Yeah, especially with Cool and the Gang playing. That can only facilitate this whole thing. But I'll give him a second to cue it up because it has to do with the Bills, who D-Mace has been very outspoken about. And the big question is, are they still in a window where they can win it? They have reset some things. They've got some different wide receivers. They moved on famously from Stephon Diggs, who's now in the division
or
with Stephon, the
Titans. Whatever you call him now, Stephon or Stephen, whatever.
Steph,
Steph.
So he's now with the Houston Texans. So what are the Bills? Are they last year before the season? I think I predicted them to win the Super Bowl, and they barely made the playoffs. But then they got into the playoffs and did pretty well. They whipped the Steelers, and then they were in the lead. They had a chance against the Chiefs and couldn't quite close the deal. So as they come back this year, having lost Diggs, they lost Gabe Davis. They've got kind of a new wide receiver room. They've had to make some tough salary cap choices. Are they still in a window to win? That's a question. So specifically, we're going to ask D-Mace about the guys that are coming up through the ranks that are going to take their place. Do we have time to play it, Nick? Do we got it? All right, so this is the NFL Ringer's take on who steps up for the Bills' offense.
That's crazy. That was his bread and butter in his prime. It's just like that's unstoppable. Like you said, 3-1, 3-1. Kelsey's the one. Good luck. You have no one who can match up with them.
And then you have Hill running like the crossover at the top. And I wonder if that's what they're trying to get back to with Worthy and Hollywood Brown, is having that guy to kind of open things up for Kelsey underneath. But we'll see what happens.
Andy's got a type. There's no doubt. I mean, you can go back to Sean Jackson, and now if you're small and can run, he's got a place for you. It's necessarily wrong. I think big picture that, you know, Poyer, Hyde, all these veterans that you just kind of let walk, they realized we need to get younger. We need to start kind of version, 2.0 or 3.0 with Josh Allen. But to your point about Mahomes, Allen is not Mahomes, but I just think he puts you in the mix every season. And I don't know that the cupboard is as bare as some people think. And so let me make the case. Dalton Kincaid last year, 673 receiving yards. In the last 10 years, that's the fourth highest total for a rookie tight end. Mm-hmm. And he caught 80% of his target. So he wasn't the most explosive guy in the way they used him, but a very efficient connection between Josh Allen and Dalton Kincaid. Khalil Shakir, 611 receiving yards. Not lighting the world on fire, but that's like wide receiver two type of production, and very efficient. He was thrown to, I didn't realize this until prepping for the pod, thrown to 45 times, Ruiz caught 39 of them. Like, that's crazy. I mean, that, like, when they went, that was working well for the Bills. Running back James Cook, 445 receiving yards, eighth among running backs, averaged 10 yards per reception. That's a big, big number for a running back. Now, listen, you compare this to some of the teams with, like, here, AJ Brown, Devontae Smith. Like, there are obviously offense where you look at it and you say, no, that's an embarrassment of riches compared to the Bills. But I look at the, like, those are three capable players who have done it. Not much. It's not like a huge projection. Like, if they do what they did last year, those are three complementary pieces. Now you throw in a guy like Keon Coleman, and we just mentioned it when we're talking about the Chiefs. Temper expectations a little bit for the rookies, but still, if he gives you 600-700 yards, now all of a sudden you have another complementary piece. So what?
Okay, so there is a little rundown of the Bills receivers without Gabe Davis and obviously without Stephon Diggs. So, D-Mace, here's the guy. Dalton Kincaid, I think we know. They've got the two tight end attack for the Bills with Dawson Knox, Nashville's own, Brentwood Academy, Ole Miss. He's really good. Was injured some last year. Kincaid, who they drafted in the first round, is a talent. He's a guy to certainly keep an eye on for fantasy drafts with your tight end. They think he's going to play a bigger role. But what do you know about Khalil Shakir? In that he was playing behind those two other guys. He had good efficiency when they did throw him the ball. And now maybe he'll get a lot more chances to have big games. Is he a guy that you think could be the fantasy receiver you want off the Bills?
I wouldn't put my house on it.
Okay, so the wide receiver translator says,
I wouldn't put my house on it. And, you know, he said, well, Shakir, to 600 yards, and listen, he averaged 15, damn near 16 yards a catch, which is phenomenal. But he's saying, oh, those are good number. Those are not good number two numbers. If you are my second receiver in this offense that they run, which they throw the ball, it seems like a lot, 600 yards, and those are not great or good numbers for a second guy in this offense. You need to be above that. I'm just honestly speaking. Now, he will get more opportunities because now that Stephon Diggs is gone, they may just elevate him to being that one or two because, frankly, they don't have a number one. They don't. Curtis Samuel, best season, 2020, 851 yards, 11 yards per catch, 3 touchdowns. That's basically pedestrian. That's pedestrian. That was his best season. He's been in the NFL, what, 5-6 years, somewhere around there.
They, on paper, definitely do not have a number one.
Claypool. His best seasons was his first two seasons, and we saw what happened to him after that. He's been on 3 and maybe 4 different teams.
I lost track. He has traveled around a
lot. Exactly. He's been a journeyman for a guy that has talent. Claypool has. He's been a journeyman after he left Pittsburgh after those 4 seasons. So this offense is not a proven offense. You go to Dawson Knox, he is what he is. His best days, I believe, are behind him. He is what he is. He's dealt with injury. He's not a number one tight end. He's a good tight end, but he's not a number one tight end.
He's an excellent role player who knows that offense. What about Kincaid? Is Kincaid the kind of guy that can really be like a Travis Kelce type that makes others better? Or are you not sure about that?
Whoa, that's saying a lot because Travis Kelce is a Hall of Famer. So that's saying a lot.
But it sounds to me like Kincaid, who was the first round pick, who did pretty well last year, he needs to make these guys better because these are a bunch of guys that have a lot of question marks.
He needs to be able to help carry this offense along with the run game until they can get this wide receiver thing figured out because they have no number one wide receiver. They barely got a number two. Hell, I don't even think they got a number two, honestly speaking. They don't even have a number two.
So Khalil Shakir, you're not that excited about.
Yeah, because I need to see him in a bigger role. I've seen guys in this league with a diminished role, and they do well in that diminished. And then you give them a bigger role, and it's like, I can't take this. I need to go back to the kiddie pool. You send them back to the kiddie pool, or you send them back to the kid table. You can't have the adult beverage. You got to go back to the Faygo and the little juice that you're drinking. So until I see him.
Would that be a Capri Sun?
No, not even Capri Sun. The one that's shaped like a barrel.
The sippy cup.
Yeah, no. What are they called? God, I forgot what those little juices are called.
The juice box?
No, I get it. Don't worry about it.
Bug juice?
Yeah. It looks like it's a little barrel, but it's a clear plastic thing, and it has the little thing you rip off the top of it and drink. I forgot what it's called.
Oh, yeah, it's like a – I know what you're talking about. Yeah. The silver top.
Yes, I forgot what that – you go back and drink that. You can't drink. But okay. I need to see him in a bigger role. Because right now they don't have a number one, and they barely have a number two.
Okay, so – let's put it through the wide receiver translator and see if I've got this straight.
I'm about to tell you.
Wide receiver translator.
So
they're effed, basically.
So you don't like the Bills.
Yeah.
D-Mace does not like the Bills wide receiver.
I think the quarterback is a good quarterback. I don't consider him, to me, and it's only me, I don't consider him an elite quarterback.
Okay.
I don't. Because
he's is the window closed on them?
I don't think the window's closed. They're just going to have to recalibrate some things, and they're going to have to figure it out. But as long as he's the quarterback, he does give you – he puts you in a position where you're going to make the playoffs more than likely. And then what happens in the playoffs, that's a different story.
Okay. Okay.
D-Mace but I don't think I'm just not in the elite bunch.
All right.
Everybody
Each
else.
Day we're going to put D-Mace through the wide receiver translator and look at some fantasy receivers for some of the key teams. When we come back – you will hear from J.C. Latham in the 1 o'clock hour. We're going to read some texts off our text line. We're going to continue our discussion. Training camp is off and running, and you're listening to 102.5 The Game.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No